Mumford and mulled my question over a sip of excellent wine.
What makes you think someone with me is responsible?
Because the men in question wouldn't be at the Bellissimo had they not been led here by someone associated with the Atlanta Council for the Blind.
So, this is about me being blind?
Not at all.
But you just accused someone on the council of endangering your children and hiding a body. Look around. I'm the only blind one.
Look around? An odd expression for a blind man to use. I didn't accuse you, I said. I'm accusing whoever represents you on the council. He put his wine glass down on the very edge of the table.
And do you want a name?
I do.
First, Mrs. Cole, let me congratulate you on putting two and two together.
There was a sharp edge to his voice. It set off an alarm in me.
I'll tell you what.
He sat back and laced his fingers behind his head.
Give me the dog collar and I'll give you the name.
Several $100 of wine slid from my hand and spilled to the balcony tile in a Waterford crystal explosion. His Heery wasn't his anything, and he wasn't blind at all. He could see perfectly fine, but he didn't have X-ray vision. I had the pink gun out of my clutch and a dart in his neck before he could cross the perfume divide and stop me. Fantasy was right. A dose of tranquilizer to the neck worked right away. The only reason I shot him was because I didn't have the collar to trade for a name. And I should have known when he adjusted his sunglasses. 18.
You got me!
Erlene scratched his head over the comatose man, Fantasy and I dragged by his legs, one each, big black poodle bringing up the rear, out of Jay Leno's suite, down the hall, through my front door, the foyer, and down the guest wing hall, to the smallest bedroom, Princess's old room. Neither bed was made, not that it mattered, because his fakeness's comfort wasn't a concern. We left him on the floor. Erlene gave him a prod with his foot.
I've never seen anyone this passed out.
You are the sorriest excuse for a doctor ever. Erlene winked at Fantasy.
It is my goal in life to win you over, beautiful maiden.
How about your goal in life be to keep this guy alive, Erlene? He turned to me.
I must insist you shower, Davis. Doctor's orders. You're destroying the optic nerves of my left eye, distorting my image of the exquisite Bianca, while burning the cornea of my right eye with overwhelmingly fragrant chemicals. If I can't see this man, I can't save his life.
Yeah, go change, Davis. You're killing me, too, Fantasy said. I'll watch the prisoner. Can you lock down Leno's place first? I asked her. Sure. Is the expensive wine still there? Did you drink it all? No. Why? I'll grab it for later.
By all means,
Erlene said.
Grab the wine.
She ignored him, checked her gun, then said, Be right back. Erlene watched her leave.
Don't you just love a pistol-packing woman who appreciates a good wine?
Erlene, have you ever met a woman you didn't love? A wheelchair appeared in the doorway. Vree was driving. Bootsy Howard, in a hospital gown built for two lumberjacks, slid out of the seat into a passed-out puddle at Earlene's feet. She wasn't wearing much under the hospital gown, which was pooled around her head.
"Indeed,"
Earlene said,
"I have."
I stepped out of the fastest shower ever, having washed a can of Bee Blonde and $900 of perfume down the drain in record time, to my waiting babies, who asked to go to bed. Four little arms reached for me. "Night, night, night." I tucked them into my bed, propped pillows around them, wishing there was someone I could ask to put me to bed. I locked the bedroom door with a keypad security code we'd never used. I hustled down the guest wing hall in relieved fantasy. "Anyone up?" I asked.
"No one's moved a muscle," fantasy said. "And I'm late."
It took me, Earlene, and Vree to cuff his fakeness to the bed frames, spread eagle. If he came too, he wasn't going anywhere unless he took two beds with him. I hooked a portable baby video monitor up on him, then took a picture of his right index finger to run his print. Vree put a pillow under his head. We put one of Vree's t-shirts on Bootsy, a Westie wearing a bright red clown nose, then piled her into Meredith's bed. Biloxi Regional had spiked her final dose of fluids with Ambien. They said when she woke up, she'd be fine, but not to expect a peep out of her for hours. I placed an audio baby monitor on the nightstand. Vree clipped the receiver to her belt. Princess was in her overturned poppin' play in the living room, yammering along with Madeline Albright, and Harley was following Vree every step. We were barely situated in the living room, me, Vree, Earlene, and the dogs, when Fantasy joined us again.
"Aren't you supposed to be at Wag the Dog?" "Davis, it's 10 o'clock.
Time was running out on me, flying.
"Who'd like a little libation?"
Earlene's head bobbed between our blank faces.
"No? No takers? A nip? A tuck? Get it?"
He slapped his seersuckered leg, laughing at his own joke, then chuckled all the way to the bar where he poured himself a tall glass of whiskey. He sat back down with it, then rubbed his hands over it.
"What's next, ladies?"
His bushy eyebrows danced.
"What other adventures do you have in store for your faithful servant, Leverett Earlene?"
"Look at Earlene," I said. "You're here because we have two half-dead people. Your only job is to keep them alive. Sit there and sip your drink while we talk."
"Has anyone seen Jenna Ray?"
Vree asked.
"She drove you here, right, Dr. Earlene? I mean, shouldn't we check on Jenna Ray? Has anyone talked to her? Has anyone seen her? If I were here by myself and I knew someone else was here from Pineapple, I'd want to hang out with them. Like dinner, maybe? Or what's that game where you pick a number? No, it's a color. You pick a color. Wait, I've got it. You pick a color and a number. One time, Gooch?"
I barely tipped my head at Fantasy, who barely acknowledged. She slipped away first, then I made my escape. We stepped out to the terrace with what was left of the Screaming Eagle Cabernet. For the first 5 minutes, we did nothing but breathe and pass the bottle.
"Where's the real oil sheik, Davis?"
"That we don't know."
"Who's the fake oil sheik?"
"We don't know that either." I pulled my phone from my pocket. I swiped past four Bellissimo security alerts without reading them. I had enough alerts of my own. I opened Safari and entered Hiridi al-Abbasov. Still, no images. We didn't even know who we were looking for.
"Where do we think he might be?"
she asked. "We have no idea."
"Do you have the energy to go to your office and watch the surveillance footage of him checking in? Maybe it was the real sheik who checked in. At least we'll know what he looks like."
"And if he checked in, he's somewhere close."
"Should we go look?"
No. I would end up in my office before the night ended, if the night ever ended, but not to look for the Sheik. For all we know, the real Sheik is the one pulling the strings. The only answer we had was $3,000 Cabernet, worth every penny. We could hear the faint strains of Bree from the living room. "Are you going home tonight?" I asked. Fantasy took her time, checking the time on her phone.
"I'm waiting until I'm sure Reggie's asleep."
She spoke slowly, reading and talking at the same time.
"He's mad about my car, refusing to believe I misplaced it."
So harsh.
"He spent the morning at the dentist and the afternoon boarding up the bonus room so no one would wander off the beach and set up camp above our garage. He blames me for everything."
"So unfair," I said. She was still looking at her phone. She put it down, then held out her hand for the bottle.
"You know what we really need to find?"
"What?" I asked.
"The dog collar."
"That, too. The real Sheik and the dog collar.
Not to mention the fake housekeepers and the dead caregiver are still in the wind."
She poured $3,000 wine down her throat, chugging it like water past what was left to me, then stood. "Where are you going?"
"Downstairs. Security says a loud woman accompanying a man with a bandaged foot sledgehammered into the dog hotel part of the conference center. They let the dogs out. The dogs are all over the casino. Then the same people and their sledgehammer went to high limits and took out the $500 Wheel of Fortune. I'm going downstairs to help No Hair and Baylor."
She yanked the bottle out of my hand and polished it off.
"Get some sleep, Davis. We're going to have another long day tomorrow."
I walked her to the door, then checked on everyone and everything, starting, then looping back and ending with my daughters. I still didn't feel safe enough with whoever it was I had cuffed to twin beds in my guest room. I called security and ordered myself 2 armed guards for the vestibule. I brewed a pot of coffee, then went to my office to steal $1 million. I'd never stolen anything in my life. Maybe Bradley's heart. That wasn't theft. He gave me his heart just like I gave him mine. I dreaded the day, and it could be soon. He gave it back. I'd miss him terribly when I went to prison. I sat down at my computer wondering if he'd visit me. I wanted to believe what Meredith believed. I was borrowing the money. But when you take something that isn't yours, even if you have every good intention of replacing it, it's still stealing. It's theft, robbery, burglary, larceny. I was on the verge of being a larcenist. A felony larcenist. The one framed picture on my desk was of the 4 of us. Bex and Quinn's first birthday, frosting everywhere. I turned it over so my family wouldn't see what I was about to do. I remembered reading about the greatest bank robbery of all time. It was at least 12 years ago. My police officer's badge was bright. A gang of Brazilian thieves rented property in downtown Fortaleza, then posing as landscapers, spent 3 months tunneling 250 feet to a bank. A bank they relieved of $70 million. My first thought when the story broke? Brilliant. The thieves were brilliant. It was August, my first summer on the job, and my police chief father and I watched the drama unfold on the television in the air-conditioned comfort of the police station while waiting on a domestic disturbance, traffic, or cat-in-a-tree call. I remember cutting my eyes at Daddy, wondering if he caught the look of admiration on my face before it occurred to me I should be, or at least pretend to be, appalled. The Brazilian bank money was never recovered, which made the exit plan even more brilliant than the heist. I needed a brilliant heist with an equally brilliant exit plan. I gave myself points for not holding a silver slipper cashier at gunpoint. In spite of me telling Fantasy we'd need a week to hit the slipper, the truth was it would have taken me 10 minutes to get in and out with a million slipper dollars. 1 minute to disable their surveillance, and 9 to wait on the cashier loading the money. But I didn't. I didn't help myself to one of the 17 million sitting in front of me when Fantasy and I took cage either. And I hadn't fenced Princess's collar. Well, there was a reason I hadn't fenced Princess's collar. I couldn't find it. There I was at midnight, alone at my desk, about to commit a million counts of larceny with my babies asleep in the bed, a hall away from a con man impersonating a blind oil baron who was a wall away from a doped witch who was a door away from Erlene on self-appointed sentry duty outside the twin bedroom with 2 taser guns and a cast-iron skillet, who was down the hall from Vree, a big black poodle, and Madeline Albright's #1 fan. My home was stuffed, and I'd never felt so alone. The computer screens in front of me were dark. I knew as soon as I powered up I'd cross the line, so I put it off. Just to put it off another minute, from my phone, I checked baby monitors, the one on my sleeping children and the one trained on the man between the twin beds who shouldn't be under the same roof with my sleeping children. Which was when it occurred to me, why should I risk getting caught stealing $1 million? Why not let him risk getting caught stealing the million? Digging through my desk drawer, past pens, paperclips, and baby girl bows, I found my Bellissimo passkey. It gave me access to 1,700 hotel rooms, including Jay Leno's. Chances were high his fakeness had a laptop. Everyone had a laptop, and they were never far from it. Instead of taking the chance I'd leave a trail, why not let him take the chance? The only problem was, I couldn't and wouldn't leave my daughters unprotected with him in the house even to walk next door. If the man left his laptop in the foyer and start to finish I was gone less than 3 minutes, I still wasn't going to take the chance. I wouldn't ask the security guards to stand at my bedroom door. I couldn't call Fantasy. She was in deep enough. I wouldn't call Baylor and ask for help, because he'd tell No Hair before he did anything else. I wasn't about to call No Hair. I could easily put Bex and Quinn in their stroller and take them with me. They'd sleep right through it. Or I could wake up Free and put her on patrol at my bedroom door with a taser gun. Then I could run next door, toss the place, find a laptop, and be right back home. How was it, in a house so full, there was no one I could trust to watch over my daughters? I thought of someone. Carrying a thick play quilt from the living room with me, I stepped over Erlene, who had passed out in the hall with one of the taser guns 1 inch from his own head, his finger on the trigger, the skillet between his sprawled, seersuckered legs. I eased open Vree's door. Harley's head popped up from the foot of the bed. "Shh," I said. By the light of the hall, I lifted a corner of the flipped pop-and-play and dropped the quilt over Princess the second she escaped. The quilt smelled like Bex and Quinn. She didn't protest. My package and I dodged Erlene on the way back to my bedroom. When I got to the door, I dropped the quilt, then spread it out. Princess turned circles on it, then glared at me with her yellow eye. I showed her the door. Guard. She spread her long, skinny legs, the 3 with patchy fur and the bald purple one, and a growl erupted from her thick middle. She showed me her teeth. I ran like the devil was chasing me. It took 4 minutes to find 2 laptops, one on the coffee table of the sitting room outside of the master bedroom, a MacBook Pro, and one askew on the floor of the solarium adjacent to the indoor pool, a Braille Note Apex BT32. I went with the MacBook, and it only took 1 minute to grab it and run to the front door, but 2 more minutes to run back to the solarium and take a second look at the Braille Note. It took 3 minutes to bust through the barricaded pool door and find Hiridi al-Abbasov. It took 7 minutes to rescue him and another minute to dial 911. Princess was right where I left her. Good dog. 19. With emergency services on the way, I stood in the hall between my open front door and the Leno suite, soaked to my bones and freezing to death. I called No Hair. I have a situation.
At this time of night, Davis, you have a situation? Too bad, because I have a situation of my own.
The Smuckers?
They're gone. I'm watching them leave now, separate squad cars, lights blazing.
I didn't say, stay right where you are, there'll be more blazing lights in a minute. Instead, I asked, teeth chattering, would you get them on?
Destruction of property.
The sledgehammered Wheel of Fortune slot machine. It won't stick, No Hair, they'll be out before sunrise.
No, they won't,
he said.
IGT is charging them with loss of income.
Wheel of Fortune was a multi-state progressive game. Cleavon and Candy Smucker hadn't just taken out the Bellissimo's wheel. They must have shut down the game nationwide. That meant more than 2,000 wheels in Las Vegas alone, no telling how many coast to coast. I hoped the Smuckers had set aside a little of the $1.5 billion, because they were going to need it when international gaming technology rained down on them.
What is it, Davis? I'm dead on my feet. I need sleep. I don't want to hear about your witch.
Baylor, that rat. Hiridi al-Abbasov?
Your neighbor?
Yes.
What about him?
I found him in Leno's indoor swimming pool. I gave No Hair a minute to process the news.
Doing what?
Floating. For 3 days he's been floating. Nothing to eat and nothing to drink but pool water. His pulse is weak and I think he has hypothermia.
Where is he now?
Under every blanket I own. An ambulance is on the way.
I'll see you in 2.
An hour later, I'd had another hot shower after my impromptu dip in the pool, and his passed-out fakeness had been uncuffed from the twin beds and was on his way to central booking. I hoped they'd put him in a holding cell with Cleavon and Candy Smucker. The arresting officer couldn't read him his rights because he couldn't rouse him. We tried a little bit of everything. Ice water, whiffs of straight ammonia, and No Hair patting him about the cheeks none too gently, probably rearranging his teeth and shuffling his brains. His fakeness wasn't waking up.
What did you do to him, Davis?
Why is that always the first place you go, No Hair? What did I do? I stole his MacBook. That's what I did. Game Corp Industries owned and maintained the 38 ATM machines scattered throughout the Bellissimo. With 30 of the machines congregated in the casino, I guess they weren't so scattered. Between the Bellissimo and our 14 neighbor casinos, Game Corp managed more than 150 ATMs in Harrison County, Mississippi alone, and more than 3,000 ATMs and casinos nationwide. For each and every casino transaction, be it a $10 withdrawal or a $10,000 transfer, Game Corp charged a $7 convenience fee. Highway robbery. They charged an additional $3 on the back end to cover the issuing bank service fee. I wasn't after the $3. at an average of 200 transactions per ATM every 24 hours, GameCorp was clearing more than $5 million a day during the week, and up to $7 million a day on the weekends, in casino convenience fees. I stopped to wonder if Bradley's next career move shouldn't be casino ATMs. They made more money than wheels. The casino ATM fees in 39 states routed to one dedicated account in Detroit. I chose 400 random ATMs in 30 states, starting in Nevada and ending in Mississippi. No pattern, there'd be no dots to connect. And rerouted the convenience fees to an anonymous offshore account. From there, I sent the money to M.D. Anderson. It wasn't like I took a sledgehammer to one of GameCorp's ATMs, which they'd notice right away. What I did was more of a slow leak. $7 at a time, 150,000 times, and so scattered across America, it would take a team of forensic accountants 6 months to find the problem, and another 6 months to find the ATMs with the glitch. I only needed 2.5 days. Or, rather, his fakeness needed 2.5 days. And I'd have 6 months to somehow, some way, repay the money. I set it up, checked it 10 times, then hit enter. The fees began pouring into Green Gully's patient account immediately. I shut it down and went to bed, having left most of the uncertainty about the right and wrong of what I was doing at the bottom of Jay Leno's indoor pool. Still, though, I didn't get much sleep, because what I'd done was mostly wrong. Bex and Quinn slept soundly all night, so naturally they were awake at the crack of dawn, jumping on my felonious head. Bite! 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 I rallied. My girls were hungry. I needed to talk to Bootsy anyway. Leverett Erline was sitting at my kitchen table sipping coffee from my favorite mug like he owned the place. "Erline," I said, "do you have any other clothes?"
"Good morning to you too, Davis."
He crossed his seersuckered legs the other way.
"And no, I was called here on a quick consultation. I'm afraid I didn't pack for an extended stay."
He straightened his bow tie, a total waste of time. The bow tie, along with the rest of him, was beyond straightening. "Why don't you go downstairs to Cuff's, the men's shop, and find something else to wear? Then go to your hotel room, shower, and put it on."
"A stellar idea," he said. "One never knows when one might be in the company of the fairer sex, and one must always be prepared. Might I have an account established at this men's shop?"
I clicked Bex and Quinn into their high chairs and poured myself a cup of coffee in Bradley's favorite mug. "An account?"
"A house account, credit, a reimbursement for services rendered, wardrobe stipend I could apply to purchases."
"No, Erline, you don't. Get off your wallet and buy yourself some clean clothes."
"Would your husband be anywhere near my size?"
"No, Erline, you're not wearing my husband's clothes." Bex and Quinn said, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!" "And another thing, Erline, hit the road. If I need you, I'll call you. Don't come back here." Bex and Quinn said, "Bye, bye, bye."
"Will your children ever speak in sentences?"
he asked. Vree spoke in sentences, long, run-on sentences. She started one in the kitchen door, wearing pink shorty pajamas with pink slippers.
"I don't know how to tell you this, Davis."
Princess on the loose again.
"I woke up this morning, and first thing, Harley and Princess and I went to the balcony, you know, where the grass is, and it's so pretty out there. It's a really nice morning. I mean, the sun is up, and there's this little breeze, and I watched the beach, and I would have watched the beach all morning, but I thought about coffee, and there's no coffee on the balcony, so Harley and Princess and I came back inside."
Where was she going with this? I served apple juice sippy cups, wheat toast triangles, sliced peaches, and little mountains of dry Lucky Charms, then poured myself a second cup of coffee during her preamble.
After I washed my face and brushed my teeth, I thought I'd better check on Bootsy because one time, vree!
I slammed my mug down. Cut to the chase. What about Bootsy?
She's gone, Davis.
Vree waved a note. I grabbed it.
I have a score to settle and a man to see.
Wednesday would be no better than Tuesday, which was more stressful than Monday, which was worse than Sunday, and it all went back to Saturday when Meredith didn't come. I dreaded Thursday, and Bootsy Howard was the world's slipperiest witch. From the kitchen phone, I called July.
Another long day?
Yes, I said. Can I bring them to you?
Of course.
10 o'clock?
I'll see you then,
July said. I'd no more put the phone down when it rang again. It was No Hair.
Davis, I'd like to see you and Fantasy in my office this morning. And don't bring the girls. You're not going to use them as an Uncle No Hair smokescreen. I need to talk to you. Be here at 9.
Then he hung up. I called July back.
Your house is destroyed.
He was right. It was. No Hair's office, on the other hand, was its usual pristine man cave. It smelled like leather and cars, cold leather and cold cars, because No Hair kept the air at Meat Locker. The only thing that didn't belong was a revolving tie rack full of neckties. In 5 years, I'd never seen No Hair wear the same tie. The 2, 3, 40, or 0 times I'd seen him that week, halfway through the week, and it was such a blur, his ties had been dog-themed. The night before, when we'd sent the sheik to the hospital, my unwanted guest to jail, and he'd apparently noticed the chaos that was my home, his tie had been all wagging tails. That day he was mixing it up. His white tie had a disturbingly large black flea on it.
Who is the goofball in the seersucker suit?
He's a doctor from Pineapple,
Fantasy said. It was very much like being in the principal's office. No Hair was behind his desk. We were in straight chairs across from him.
What's he doing here?
I opened my mouth to make up something, but Fantasy took that one, too.
The dead woman. We didn't know what she died of.
What dead woman?
The caregiver, she said.
Whose caregiver?
No Hair asked.
The dog's.
Which dog?
The black one, Harley.
No Hair put a hand over his eyes and shook his bald head. When he returned, he told Fantasy to shut up. He'd heard enough from her. He aimed at me.
Start talking.
Well, No Hair, there's this man, Green Gully. He owns Jesus Water.
He owns what?
Jesus Water.
What the hell is Jesus Water, Davis?
Blessings in a bottle, drink the water, be blessed. No Hair inhaled sharply, and the look on his face said he didn't like my answers any better than he'd liked Fantasy's.
Does this Jesus Water man have anything to do with anything anywhere remotely related to this property? Or is this all you, Davis?
I scratched my head. Could you rephrase the question?
The Smuckers, Fantasy said.
What about them? The Jesus Waterman has something to do with the Smuckers?
No Hair looked hopeful.
No, Fantasy said. I was asking what's going on with the Smuckers.
Don't do that to me,
No Hair said.
Do what? She asked.
Change the subject.
What was the subject? I asked. No Hair slammed a fist on his desk. We jumped.
We're going to start over,
No Hair said.
And I want straight answers.
Our heads rolled compliantly.
Why were you in the Leno suite?
He asked.
Tossing to Davis, Fantasy said. I wasn't in the Leno suite except to lock up and get the wine.
Is that the problem?
No Hair asked.
Are you too drunk?
It's 9 o'clock in the morning, I said. No one's drunk.
Answer the question,
he said. I couldn't very well say I was there to steal a laptop. I wasn't about to open that bucket of worms, so I went with something safe. I heard a noise.
You didn't hear anything in the Leno suite unless you had your ear to the door, Davis. Why would you have your ear to the Leno door?
I scratched my ear. No Hair slapped his desk with both hands.
We're getting absolutely nowhere, and I, for one, have work to do.
He turned to Fantasy.
Since you asked, the Smuckers were released.
Then to me.
You were right. The judge said we didn't have enough to hold them on.
What about IGT? I asked. I thought they were pressing charges.
They were. They are. They will. But the drunk tank was past capacity, so in an effort to lower the body count, a judge was called in for middle-of-the-night arraignments. At the time, IGT's lawyers were just landing. They certainly didn't have time to file charges, so the Smuckers are ours again.
That's terrible news, I said.
Hang on to your hat, Davis. It gets worse. The man we took from you, the one you had cuffed to the bedpost, who you call his phony.
His fakeness, I said.
What the hell ever, Davis?
No Hair's face was red, so red.
He's not in jail either,
No Hair said.
The officers took him to the emergency room first, where the man's blood work came back with toxic barbiturate levels.
Arlene was the worst doctor ever, ever, of all the bad doctors ever.
Do either of you think this man drugged himself?
No Hair asked. Our heads rolled uncertainly.
No,
No Hair asked.
Do either one of you know who drugged this man?
I'm taking the fifth, I said.
I'll take the sixth, Fantasy said, because I don't want to incriminate Davis either.
Okay,
No Hair said.
I get it. You two had such a beef with this guy, you pumped him full of barbiturates to the point of almost killing him, then chained him to beds, and yet you either don't remember what he did to piss you off, or you don't care to share. How about I share?
I had a feeling I didn't want to hear what No Hair had to share.
The drugs wore off in the emergency room,
No Hair said.
The man came too. He knocked an orderly over the head with a suction aspirator machine and helped himself to the orderly's clothes and wallet. He walked right past the two patrolmen sleeping in the waiting room, then out the door. The good news is we know his name.
I wanted to hear the name. I hadn't had time to run the print on my phone, and when I'd set up the ATM con on his MacBook, the username I'd bypassed was initials and numbers.
Rod J. Sebastian.
My heart skipped a beat.
Does that mean anything to you two? And if it does, would you give me a straight answer? No? Let me connect the dots for you. The man you tried to kill was Rod J. Sebastian, Hiridi Alabasov's personal secretary, who all but killed Alabasov when he pushed him into the pool to spend 3 days bobbing like a cork with his hands and feet bound and a pool float around his neck barely keeping his head above water. Which means we want him. And we're not the only ones. We ran Mr. Sebastian's prints through the system and found out he's wanted under an alias for child abandonment in Florida, for impersonating the Sheik and embezzling donations from a non-profit organization for the blind in Atlanta. And get this,
Nohare said.
Animal Control wants him, too. The police raided his home and found an illegal dogfighting operation. He and two of his cousins are running on a farm just outside city limits.
Any lingering doubt I had about what I'd done on Rod J. Sebastian's laptop flew out the window.
And not a little operation,
Nohare said.
They rescued 40 dogs from appalling conditions.
Then out to sea.
So we want him,
Nohare said.
The Sheik wants him. The blind people want him. The mother of the two abandoned children wants him. Animal Control and the feds want him. And you, too, are the reason we don't have him.
I was having trouble breathing.
Be warned.
Nohare shook his finger at us.
Sebastian's on the loose, and you better watch your backs. He might, like me, be more than a little irritated with you.
He turned to Fantasy.
I'll see you at noon in the doghouse.
Then me.
I'll see you at 2 for the dog show. And call your husband. He's coughing his head off.
Nohare sat back.
That'll be all.
He pointed at the door. We slinked out. We slinked to the elevator. Neither of us had the energy to push the call button, so we slinked down the wall to sit on an upholstered bench in the cold, empty vestibule. Fantasy's fog lifted first.
We found Bootsy, then we lost her again. We found the secretary, who we didn't know was a serial criminal secretary, and his name is Sebastian, just like the fake housekeeper Sebastian. So there's the connection between Alabasov and the Smuckers. A serial criminal secretary connection. We didn't even know who we were looking for, but now he's in the wind again, which puts all 3 Sebastians and the witch and the dead caregiver in the wind. The Smuckers are out of jail. We can't find their dog's collar, and there's no $1 million.
About that.
About what?
She asked.
Which part?
The $1 million. I looked right and left, making sure there were no eavesdroppers. I cupped my hand over her ear and whispered. She stopped me to whisper in my ear.
He deserves it, Davis. For the dog fighting alone, he deserves it.
She stopped me again to whisper.
$7 for a convenience fee is outrageous. Game Corp had this coming, too.
When I finished, she said,
brilliant.
20. For the final round of the dog competition, the contestant interviews, Bianca had me in a Shetland pony dominatrix getup. The dress looked wet, as in liquefied, and felt like jello. I think it was made of rubber. It was as white as the driven snow, covered just enough of me to be street legal, took 20 minutes to skid into, and that was just the half of it. The other half were the accessories. One was a purse, or a clutch. I didn't know what to call it, because it was a horse's foot on a gold chain. A whole horse's foot. I didn't know if it was real or not, and I didn't want to know. The other accessory went over the dress. The whole wet, white dress. It was either a harness or bridle. Whichever, it was silver-spiked black leather and laced all the way up the back. Or maybe it laced all the way up the front. Vree was trying to help.
I think this part goes in your mouth.
In 1 million years, Vree, I am not walking around with leather straps in my mouth.
Then they're going to have to hang down. And hanging down, they look, well, they hit you in a bad place. They look like black leather tassel headlights. You know what I mean? They fall right on your girls.
Let them fall. I'd be falling with them soon enough. The over-the-knee black leather boots with silver studs and spurs Bianca sent had 8-inch needle-thin heels. The accompanying note said, updo and smoky eyes, David. Very up and very smoky.
We studied the final results in the mirror.
In a way, you look pretty,
Vree said. In every other way, I looked like I'd escaped the mental facility I called home. When I hobbled into the competition arena, carrying a horse's foot and hanging on to Vree for dear life, who wears 8-inch heels, one of my fellow judges spotted me, startled, then spun around. I could see his shoulders shaking. He turned back around, took a second look, then took a keen interest in the floor. His head started bobbing. At first, it was just a chuckle he tried and failed to hide. After a few minutes, he was openly laughing to the point of tears. Then, through the entire round of dog questions, every 10 minutes or so, he would lean forward, take another peek at me, then double over again. Near the end, he gave up, laid his head down, and pounded the judge's table with his fist.
Sorry,
he choked out.
I'm so sorry. I can't help it.
I found his name on the score screen, Minton Williams. When the last question was posed to the last pooch, "How old are you?" and he answered with 4 barks, I slipped my phone out of the horse hoof and checked Green Gully's M.D. Anderson account. It had almost $300,000 in it, and his patient status had been changed from inactive to pre-op. I read a quick email from my sister. Four Seasons was accommodating the iron-rich diet Green's doctors had her on. She couldn't do the oysters or lentils, but everything else was fine. She'd check in at M.D. Anderson at 5 Friday morning. She'd finish by 8, but wouldn't be released until 2. Observation. After, it'd be back to Four Seasons to pick up bubblegum, then on to the airport for their 4 o'clock flight to Gulfport Biloxi International. She'd see me at 6 Friday. I couldn't wait until 6 Friday. Dog interviews over, the room clearing, I logged into Facebook.
Where to?
Vree asked. Ivory's. I had to wrap my arms around her waist to take a baby step. The piano bar in the casino.
Do you need me to stay with you?
No, Vree, I've got this. Go upstairs and take care of the dogs. In sunglasses the size of bread plates, my updo on its way down, I hung the horse foot around my neck by the gold chain as I limped into Ivory's fist over fist along a brass handrail. Candy Smucker was alone at the bar nursing a big blue drink. She'd freshened up since her mugshot. She was wearing a loose tank top above tight-ripped jeans. There was more rip than jean. She came up from her drink and looked at me.
You're in worse shape than I am.
She slid off the bar stool.
You need a hand?
I needed a foot. 2 of them.
I love your outfit.
She helped me limp along.
Where'd you get your boots?
She helped me onto a bar stool.
They're hot.
You can have them.
For real?
If you can help me take them off, you can have them.
What size are they?
She asked. 6½.
I wear a 6 on one foot and a 7 on the other, she said. One of my hands is bigger than the other one, too.
She displayed. I made what I hoped was an appropriate noise. I landed my Clydesdale clutch on the bar. Candy's mouth dropped open.
Where'd you get that? It's the most beautiful purse I've ever seen in my life.
She reached out and stroked the horsehair.
I want one so bad.
She picked it up and clacked it on the bar.
Here, horsey, horsey.
More clacking.
Where'd you get it?
I can't remember.
Say, you want a drink?
Then, 20 decibels louder,
Hey, bar boy, bring me and my friend a drink. Get your ass out here.
She turned to me.
He tried to run me off when I got here. I had to tip him big. Money talks and bullshit walks, you know?
I nodded. I knew. Ivory's didn't officially open until 5. The bar was dark, the piano silent, and the candles on the cocktail tables cold. A male head popped through a cracked door behind the bar. I turned so he wouldn't think he knew me, as Candy ordered a round of flaming volcanoes, which I'd never heard of. Then she sat at my feet and worked down the rows of hook and eye closures on both boots. A woman worth $1 billion sat on the floor of a bar to help a total stranger whose feet hurt. When she pulled the second boot off, I thanked her and meant every word of it.
Thank you, too. She stood. I needed some company.
Bad day?
Woke up in jail.
She tossed her new boots.
That always makes for a bad day.
Sorry. She waved it off.
It was a nice jail, she said. I've been in way worser.
You're Candy, right? She slapped the bar.
How'd you know?
We're Facebook friends.
Get out!
I nodded.
You from Atlanta?
No, I said, but I'm looking for someone who is.
His name ain't Cleve, is it?
I shook my head no, then reached in the horse hoof for my phone. I found a photograph of Brutus and Butch Sebastian. I'm looking for these men. She zoomed in and out. She picked my phone up and angled it for better light.
Yeah, I know them.
I need to find them.
I wouldn't go looking for those two. They're bad news. What do you want with them?
Child support? Candy nodded gravely.
Which one?
I'm not sure.
Get out! You don't know which one! You go, girl!
She punched me in the arm. My rubber dress took the blow. You wouldn't know where they are, would you?
Nope.
I studied my white rubber lap as the bartender placed big blue frozen drinks in front of us. When the coast was clear, I looked up and asked Candy how she knew Brutus and Butch Sebastian.
This one,
she stabbed my phone, was supposed to be my dog sitter, and this other one,
stab, stab, was supposed to be my bodyguard. Do you see a bodyguard?
Her arms flailed.
Is there anybody guarding this body? No.
I waited. She drank.
Me and Cleve.
She paused to explain.
Cleve's my husband.
I nodded.
We hired them to come with us, sight unseen. Then I told Cleve, Cleve, we need to meet them for real. Because anybody with a nose ring can be a bodyguard, but not just anybody can be a dog sitter. You know what I mean?
I knew what she meant.
They got to our place and our dog throwed a fit. She tore into them the minute she laid her eye on them. She got one of them in the face, the one with the beard.
That's terrifying. And I meant it. What'd you do?
We got her a hotel room.
Ah.
Last night we got to missing her. We went upstairs to the dog hotel and couldn't find her.
That wasn't the dog hotel, Candy.
Then Cleve got in a little fight with a slot machine.
I would call what Cleve got into with the wheel more of a big fight.
That's when we went to jail.
Ah.
It'll be okay,
she said. We got 1,100 lawyers. You're going to need all 1,100. Have you seen them since?
Seen who?
She asked. I gave my phone a nod.
Since when?
She asked. Since you met them in Atlanta.
They're here,
she said.
Me and Cleve ran into them the other day. I saw them getting into the elevator with an old lady and a black dog. I said, hey, you two, where you been?
They acted like they didn't even know us.
Then they were gone. I said, Cleve, that was them, right?
Then Cleve said,
hell if I know.
She paused for a sip of Flaming Volcano.
We had tequila for breakfast that day.
What day was that?
Well, the day we had tequila for breakfast.
I was nowhere. The only solid lead I had from Candy placed the fake housekeeper Sebastian with Doris Harrington and Harley in an elevator the day she had tequila for breakfast.
Those two are the reason Cleve got so worked up last night.
Really?
Them and he got on the whiskey. When Cleve gets on the whiskey, watch out.
Duly noted.
Here.
She reached into her purse and returned with a card key.
Take this. Like a trade for the boots. Go get their asses.
What is it?
It's the key to their hotel room. But watch out, they trashed it. It stinks.
Why do you have their room key?
Well, they came with us, she said. It was our constellation prize to them since our dog drew blood. We don't want anybody suing us, you know.
Too late.
We already had their reservations,
she said.
So we said, y'all, come on.
Now I knew why the brothers Sebastian were here, but I still didn't know why the Smuckers were mad at them.
And them acting like they didn't even know us.
I could think of worse offenses.
Then last night a casino woman tracked us down to tell us our room stinks so bad the maids won't go in it.
Cleve said,
what the hell? We haven't even been in our room. Then she told him we charged our room bill up too high. And Cleve said, what the hell? You ever heard of cash, lady? I pay cash. Then she said, no, I'm talking about room charges, mister. High charges. Cleve said, what the hell? How high? She said, high, high, through the roof. Then Cleve said, what the hell? Prove it, lady. She had a paper a mile long with room charges for their room.
She stabbed my phone. Those were worse offenses.
Cleve went up there to give him a piece of his mind.
I don't blame him, I said.
He took his sledgehammer with him.
Who packs a sledgehammer? Did he find them?
Nope. He fell asleep in the elevator. When he woke up, he forgot he was looking for them. Course, he was on the whiskey.
She pushed the room key closer.
You give it a try. You got a sledgehammer?
I shook my head.
Take a tire iron. Takes longer, works just as good. When you're done with them, tell them Cleve and Candy said we don't appreciate them running up those high charges and stinking up their hotel room.
Then she reached back in her purse and whipped out her phone. In one smooth move, she slung an arm around my shoulders, pressed her cheek against mine, and snapped a picture.
What's your name? I'm gonna tag you.
Bianca Sanders.
the bartender, who came out of nowhere, supplied.
Spell that, Candy said. I can't spell worth a shit.